Blog Talk Radio.
Show. Thanks for listening. I'm Carrie Ann Flanagan Broski.
And I'm Joe Giaquinto. The Spirit Connection provides listeners with information on how you can connect with your loved ones on the other side.
Tonight we have producer and author Stephen Sakellarius joining us. Stephen will be discussing reincarnation, including his own personal story, as well as how to continue a relationship with your soulmate even after death. Before we bring Stephen on and before we get to our own upcoming events and announcements, Joe and I would like to acknowledge the devastating events which occurred last week in Connecticut at the Newtown School.
That's right. It's important to keep the families of the victims in our thoughts and prayers, and we'd like to have 10 seconds of silence while we're on the air for them.
Okay, thank you, Joe. They will be forever in our hearts. Well, I can't believe the end of the year is almost upon us, Joe. Are you still having some events?
I am. I had two very nice group readings this last month. They were both full events. We had a good crowd. One event, we had a lot of people kind of doubled up against the wall in the room. It was really too many people for that.
Was this the private home one?
No, that was the one. There were two of them. One was a private group reading for family and friends, and then there was a publicly open group reading. There were small groups, but they were in a small space. So it was a very great reading. I got around to most everyone, and we have another reading coming up on January 11th, same location in Melville. If anyone that's interested in that, they can go to my website. www.joegpi.com. We'll also have a ghost investigation on December 28th, and that's going to be in the Patchogue area. So anyone's interested in that, I'll be at that investigation, kind of tuning in to see who wants to talk to me. And I just want to thank everybody again for the nice feedback. They've been emailing, calling me on the readings, telling me that they've been getting good information and they appreciated the time that I took to, you know, meet with them. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody out there, for joining us. And how's your book doing, The Metal?
Yeah, it's doing very, very well. It's become a hot Christmas item here in Huntington at the Book Review. They've been selling out, and it's been doing very well on Amazon and at BarnesandNoble.com. And it's a great book for the holidays, too, because it's a work of inspirational fiction. So, and it has to do with miracles and angels and everything. So it's doing very well, and I'll be continuing my marketing for it throughout the new year. And you can check out the website if you're interested in that. It's at www.PadrePoMetal.com, and I have some new videos on there, and thanks to Joe who put them on my website for me. For those of you who don't know, Joe does website work on the side. That's actually his main occupation, doing all sorts of computer work. So do check out that website just to see what Joe was working on. So it came out great, and he worked on it with my husband Carl. So thank you to both of you for my great website.
Great.
I have a new blog out this week, and that is on angels and miracles. And again, it does mention a little bit about the book. And I think we all could use some angels and miracles with all that has been going on in the world.
Definitely.
So do check out that blog. That's on patch.com in Huntington. Actually, I think it's on all the patches, but if you go to the huntingtonpatch.com, or you could even get to it if you go to my website, my other website at carrieannflanaganbroski.com, you'll see the patch icon. and you could click on that. As for events, I don't have anything coming up right now because it is in the midst of Christmas, so I will be scheduling events hopefully soon for 2013, and you'll be able to find those out on my website as well, that PadrePioMetal.com. And for my final announcement, I just wanted to thank everyone who took the time to vote for me the past couple of months for the Long Island Press Magazine contest for Best Long Island Author for 2013. Voting ended on December 15th, this past Saturday. And I just want to thank everyone for the tremendous outpouring and support. People were putting the link on the Facebook and everything. So we'll find out in a couple of weeks. We'll see if
I was going to ask Nelson DeMille this year.
I know. I mean, Nelson DeMille came out with
his book, hand is tired from pressing the vote button every day.
Well, last year, because I think there were, what do we have, 15 or 20 authors who were nominated, and I came in third under Nelson DeMille. And but this year, his book, his new book, The Panther, give him a little plug, that came out just a few days before my book came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's a great guy, though, and I, you know, I've met him many times, and he's very supportive of my work as well. But it would be fun to beat him, wouldn't it? I don't know if I can, but we'll see.
Well, let's see what happens.
He's very busy.
And
keep you posted.
Definitely. Thank you, Carrie-Anne. And speaking of great, memorable things, it was great having Juliana Rose Teal back with us last week.
I know, wasn't
it?
She's in our chat room again tonight. She just joined us.
Hi there. And then I just wanted. We had this live chat room, which we'll talk. We'll give that information in a moment here. But, you know, I'm so glad the world's not going to end tomorrow. Actually, what's it, like 3 a.m. this morning, right? It's going to end, supposedly.
I think something like that. I mean, so thanks to Juliana and all of our other medium friends that we've had on the show who have reassured us, although the way the world is these days, I mean, we had some awful things happen on Long Island yesterday as well with a horrific 35 car accident on
the Long Island
Expressway,
which
is the worst
amazing for this area
Long Island
too.
Has ever had. So,
I've driven that same road like seven or eight times
constantly.
This weekend.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know what happened there, but I think they had the construction zone and everybody. That happened to me once. I had that same type accident years ago in New Jersey where it was a construction zone. Everybody just stopped and then. Other people that weren't aware of it because it was so far out in the desolate area that they just didn't, they got caught by surprise and they couldn't stop in it. It's just a dangerous situation.
Who knows?
You have to remember to just take it easy out there. It's the holidays, but, you know, everybody's got a lot on their mind. They're worrying about money and, you know, what their job is. You just got to slow it down a little bit. And
that's our message for today. Yeah, that is definitely the message. And it's interesting because we had interviewed some people on my website for those videos I mentioned, and that was one of the themes that one of the people that endorsed the book, that, you know, we're at a point that we need to slow down and think about what's important in our lives and just be grateful for things and because it's just so much going on. So, you know, we try to stay on the positive on the Carrie-Anne and Joe show, and we hope that we bring all that good energy to our listeners each week.
Yeah.
So thank you
for joining us
every week.
Exactly. And I just want to say, Carrie-Anne, that just in case, here's the dollar I owe you. I'm throwing it in the mail.
You don't want any stuff. I know. You want cookies. We were having this cookie
conversation. For, you know, guys out there, we have kind of a crazy schedule. And just so you know, we have a enhanced version of the show we did for the Christmas last year. That it's probably going to run. I didn't tell Carrie-Anne this, but I'm telling you now. It's going to run at a normal time on Thursday, but that's the day after a couple of days after Christmas. So
it's not a live show, but I may actually run it during
Christmas sometime, maybe Christmas Day or some Christmas Eve, because it's a cool show, and it's not live, so we can run it more than once. So
but
I may do that
funny
and then replay
it. And you had put some special effects into that. I have to take a look at it.
Oh, yeah. Yes. It's going to be a fun show, and you'll feel like you're really out there with us in a Christmas market somewhere. So.
That's so great. But it's so funny because we talk about food a lot on the show, you know, realizing it. And we talk about the cookies, and I'm thinking because we have Susie Reed-Dreams, who's also one of our guests and one of our listeners each week. And Susie's always wants to know what kind of cookies. So, yeah, I had chocolate chip and snickerdoodles tonight. Carl made the snickerdoodles, I have to say. He made his own batch of
cookies. Yeah, and all I know is we ran out of coffee over here, and it's been a tough night. That's right. I got to go out at like 6 in the morning and get coffee tomorrow. But let's talk quickly about the lineup, and we're going to move right on
to let's get on to that.
Our special guest.
Bring Stephen on. All right, so tonight, as we just mentioned, is our last live show for this year, because then next week is the last week already, so Joe has that wonderful show lined up for you if you do want to check into that. For January, we have a great lineup beginning on January 3rd. It's just going to be the two of us getting to know Carrie Ann and Joe. So it's going to be an overview of how we met, the Ghost of Long Island books, Joe's journey to mediumship, the Ghost Hunters of Long Island group, and my writing career going from 5 nonfiction books to the new one. So it's going to be sort of an overview to start the year off, and so we're looking forward to that. Then on January 10th, we have Thomas Fusco, who's going to talk about Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality. And that's going to be something brand new that we haven't had him on before. The next week we have Megan Humphreys, another new guest. She is the lead investigator of the Panhandle Paranormal, and she has some amazing stories that she wants to share. Then we have medium Robin Marie from the Massachusetts area, and she's worked on cold cases with the police, and she is very well known and has an extensive amount of traveling doing her mediumship work, and she's going to be talking about many things, including photo scrying. And then we have a real treat for you ending the month on January 31st. We're going to have duo mediums. We're going dueling mediums, I should say. We're going to be featuring Richard Scholler, who again is a return guest and a friend of ours, and he's going to be joined by Bill Collar, the Scottish medium, who we've had on the show as well. And so that's going to be a really interesting night. So we're working on right now the topics and things that
good,
we want to
good.
Discuss. So that's
cool.
Our full lineup.
Great,
yeah,
thank
I
you.
Think that
and then
just about covers it.
That's a lot of good stuff. And then if you want to call our show tonight, we are not taking any readings tonight. Stephen will take your calls if you have any calls about reincarnation or comments, your own experience, you want to just ask Stephen a question, we encourage you to call. But again, we'll not be doing any live readings tonight. And the number is 310-982-4264. It's 310-982-4264. And you can also join our chat room. We have several members that are regulars in there, and we welcome them tonight. I see them all there, they're typing away, and you can post your questions to us also there. We often take questions from the chat room. So just join Blog Talk Radio. It's free. And then you can join the Carrie Ann and Joe show live in progress, and you can chat. The chat button's below. Okay, let's get going and talk about Stephen.
Okay.
And all right.
And
I
didn't even get to ask him. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
Well, he'll let us know.
He'll let us know. Stephen, so we're going to give you a little background before we bring him on. Stephen Sakellarios is the producer of the Reincarnation documentary In Another Life, Reincarnation in America, which aired on former PBS affiliate KBDI in Denver, Colorado. He is the author of 3 e-books, Matthew Franklin Whittier in His Own Words, which is a scholarly attempt to prove Stephen's own reincarnation case as the younger brother of romantic poet John Greenleaf Whittier. His next book is Loving Abby in Truth and Spirit, which is the story of how Stephen reconnected with Abby Hoyan Whittier, which was Matthew's first wife. And then finally, he's the author of Eastern Mysticism and Psychotherapy, A Guide to Therapy from the Mystical Perspective.
Stephen has a master's degree in counseling and studied reincarnation for 39 years and has maintained the In Another Life website, one of the most extensive on the topic of reincarnation in the world since its inception in 1998. He regularly channels Abby's blog on that site and is learning piano from her via inner prompting in preparation for eventually channeling her music, which I think that's really cool. I've been doing some work with spirits on channeling stuff. You know, this spirit photography, and it's fantastic. I can't wait to hear about this. Tonight, Stephen discusses his amazing research and encounters with a lost loved one from the other side.
It is now with great pleasure that we introduce Mr. Stephen Sekelarios. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for inviting me on.
Hi.
Hi, Stephen.
Good. Please,
welcome.
Please tell me that I pronounced your last name
correctly.
You did
it perfectly. Perfect.
Oh, good.
And
yeah,
you
know,
not too many people do either.
Butchering everyone.
Yeah, Stephen,
well,
they massacre my name.
So yeah, yours gets pretty messed up,
Giaquinto,
too. So
oh,
fine,
my gosh.
So. Well, mine's just too long, so that's the problem. But
right.
I'm glad I got it right for you and that we could do that nice introduction. And it's a pleasure, you know, having you on the show tonight.
Yeah, this is really
exciting. An
interesting
topic. Yeah, with a little bit of a different approach.
Definitely.
I was going to say that I can do readings, but you'll have to figure out what you want me to read. You know,
that's
you know I thought
one.
I would say that just because we do have, often we have people that are spiritual people, whatever their work is, with medium, psychic, you know, healing, people invariably call and they want to find out what's going on in their life and what they should do. And
sure.
We love those calls, but tonight I think it's really you have a really great story, and time is already moving so fast. So we're going to get right to this, and let's see. I guess I want to ask you first: what got you studying reincarnation? And I mean, was it an awareness there was something else you felt beyond this life, like something that was coming through, or did somebody from the other side contact you and was trying to talk to you and said, "Gee, maybe they know me"?
Well, it actually was in two stages, and I have to go back for the first stage all the way back to when I was about 19 or younger, and I was starting to study the religions of the world and some spiritual teachers, you know, along with them, contemporary ones. And I was studying Eastern philosophy, and reincarnation just came in with a package, and I don't remember ever resisting it at all. It made perfect sense to me. So it just, you know, there wasn't any aha point where I said, oh, you know, reincarnation. It just was all part of what I was learning, and I accepted it. But
right.
Then if we fast forward to 1997, then I'd started a video business, and I wanted to do a documentary, and decided, I just woke up one morning knowing it was going to be about reincarnation for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I started studying what's been done in the Western world in terms of research, and I learned about past life therapy, which I'd never heard of, and I found out that there was Dr. Ian Stevenson had been studying reincarnation scientifically out of the University of Virginia, and so then I began to learn about the research. So it really was two stages.
Mm. Wow. I mean, it's so fascinating, and the fact that you've been studying it this long. Now, in what ways has lack of understanding about reincarnation hurt society? I mean, and why do so many religions reject the idea?
Well, to take the first part of that, it's one of those things that's so obvious it's almost hard to get a handle on for me. But the place I would start is that reincarnation is really about taking responsibility. It gives a reason, a metaphysical reason, why one needs to take responsibility, because there's consequences in the next life. There's, you know, you're creating your own world out in front of you, good or bad. So it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's total responsibility. But
that's
in
interesting.
In our society, we don't have any, there's no real understandable logical reason to take responsibility. So what happens is we've got religion, which is becoming more of a myth, and it's getting discredited by science. So that people are kind of throwing out that reason to take responsibility for things.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, you have ethics and legal responsibility and, you know, that kind of thing. And gradually that's also getting thrown out by a lot of people who are just being practical, you know, selfishly
mm-hmm.
practical. And they say, well, we don't really need to be ethical because we want to get ahead, you know, or we want to survive, or we want to, you know,
right.
make money or whatever. So because reincarnation has been lifted out of the culture, the real reason that makes sense for being responsible and for taking responsibility has been kind of lost. So that would be the first thing that I would go to. And and there's many others, because without reincarnation, there's a cynicism about life. You lose the sense that life has meaning, and you become
cynical. And a continuity.
And a continuity, and you also see all these awful things going on, and there's no answer. Yeah, there's no reason for any of this stuff to be happening. So you become cynical. Yeah, so for both of those reasons and many others.
And do you think more people are starting to accept the idea then?
I think it's gradually coming in. I mean, back in 1998, I saw much less of it and had a lot more resistance than I do now. So I think it's coming.
It does seem to be evolving, and just in general, I mean, spiritually, there's so many things people are more open to. I don't know, maybe it just goes in cycles, but I think the advantage we have now is there's much more credible science and technology and rationale, and we have a couple few hundred years, 1,000 years of study, where when it's first coming up, you know, it was more like there were a lot of charlatans, and you really had no way of verifying stuff because we didn't have the databases that we have now to look up things. And
that's true.
You know, but I wanted to ask you, in attempting to prove reincarnation, what methods have you used? I mean, there's several ways. There's past life regression. There's hypnosis. I mean, or both. But what have you done on your research?
Well, I used a 4-prong approach, really speaking. And the first thing was from having studied past life therapy back when I did my documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that past life emotions are very easily accessible, and so much so that I think that they're always, I don't think they're even blocked, really speaking. I think we react to other people and situations with our past life emotions. We don't even realize we're doing it. So the emotions are there. So it's like a person with total amnesia, but, you know, maybe he sees his wife and he doesn't even recognize her because he's got amnesia, but he knows he loves her. He doesn't know who she is, you know. So
right.
The emotions are there. So I decided, well, that's used for therapy, but I think I can use that for research. I think I'm the first person that's really made that connection. So I can do that. So that was one. I also had 2 psychic readings, and I also had 2 past life hypnotic regressions. And there's one other element to this, to emotions, and that is what I would call recognition memory. And I seem to have that a little stronger than most people. It's the only kind
that?
Of psychic ability I have.
That?
Well, I looked at a photograph from my past life, and I recognized. Now, I knew that person. You know, I was friends with that person, or I didn't like that person. Or, you know, I recognized. In other words, just like you might recognize somebody from, you know, from grade school. I had that happen. I was paddling a canoe once. Through a tunnel that connected one lake to another lake, and coming the other way was I was married. There was another couple coming the other way, and I said, "You were in my second grade class." And she says, "Yeah, you were." You know, so
oh,
you
really?
Know, she was. Right. Yeah, this was like in college, you know. But I recognized her face. So I have that, but with past life people.
And what did you,
and,
what
and
did you
I
call that?
That
fourth? What was that
I've thrown a label on it. I call it. You know, past life recognition memory.
Recognition.
You know?
Wow, that's great.
I mean, I just coined that. You know, you can call it anything.
But I know we're going to get into more of the wittier thing, but when did you know about that? I mean, what picture or what triggered that particular?
Well, that was
we're
going to
go
into
more into this.
Yeah, I found his picture. But the way I found his picture was that I had a psychic reading many years ago, and she said, "You were a woman writer, probably on the West Coast, maybe around 1920, 1930, you wrote serials and you were pretty successful." So I was kind of on the lookout for a name of a woman writer that rang a bell for me, you know. And I would look every once in a while, and I finally found a name, but it was not from the West Coast and it was not from 1920s or 30s. It was from the 1800s in Boston, you know. So wrong place, wrong time, but I definitely recognized the name, and it was Sarah Orne Jewett, who was one of the romantic writers. And so I got on a website about her and was, you know, looking around, and I couldn't, you know, I said, well, I wasn't her, I'm sure of it, you know, but it seems really familiar. So after, oh, maybe 3 weeks, I sent that website to a friend of mine who has a strong knack for synchronicity, coincidences. And I said, you know, surely he'll find it if anybody can find it, because I'd had a lot of very interesting coincidences with him in the past. So about half an hour later, he shoots back a URL, a page, and it was buried in that website is a list of her social circle. And each one, if you click on it, shows a picture of the person. And there was people we've all heard of, including John Greenleaf Whittier, who was a romantic poet, and a bunch of other people that whose names I recognized. And way down at the bottom was John Greenleaf Whittier's brother, Matthew Franklin Whittier, mm-hmm. who I'd never heard of, and I clicked on it. And as soon as I looked at the picture, I said, "That's me." That recognition kicked in. I looked at the eyes, and there's a sadness in his eyes, and a depth, and a kind of quiet nobility about the person. And I just knew looking at his eyes, which supposedly stay the same from one incarnation to another. And my friend had noticed that, well, he looks like you, which he does. About, I would say about 85% he looks like me, similar look. And I said, that's, I know it's me. So that
wow.
kicked in, and then I started researching him from there and found that there were incredible parallels between his life and the way his mind worked and his talents, and there was huge parallels between him and myself. But I had no idea of any of those parallels. When I first saw the picture, I had no idea what kind of person he was. I just said, I know that's me.
Right. That is really amazing. And then you went on from there, which we'll, you know, get more involved with. But now what's interesting about the work you do is that so much of it is based on research, not just on past life regression therapy sessions where a person is under light hypnosis. Now, you've done both, but you really stress the research end of things and also the importance of going to a licensed and reputable therapist if you do go under hypnosis. This is how I found out about my own, because I happen to know someone who's an author who's a licensed therapist. He has a huge practice, and he does some of these on the side. So, all right, so we talked about how, your own reincarnation case, but what other type of research did you do then going forward? You know, you gave us a little overview here. What was the next steps?
Well, the next step, first off, there's two ways to prove things, and one is to yourself, and the other is to anybody else. And this is the mistake that's made, I think, by a lot of people who investigate a reincarnation case. They approach it as though they're going to try to prove it to themselves, but that doesn't necessarily prove it to anybody else. If you want to prove it to somebody else, you have to create a track record. And the way that the analogy I use is that, for example, an amateur archaeologist, you know, might go in and he'd find a grave site, you know, and he'd start digging, you know, and start throwing stuff over in a pile, and he might take a couple of pictures, and, you know, when he got done, he didn't have a pile of cool stuff. But there'd be no way to tell where was it, you know, it wouldn't tell a story, in other words. You wouldn't know where was it. Was it lying right next to this? Was the knife right next to the, you know, bone or whatever? Whereas a professional would go in and he'd grid everything off and carefully, you know, sketch everything and, you know, keep careful notes as to what layer was first, mm-hmm. and second and third. So this is what I tried to do. Even though I'm dealing with emotions and intangible kinds of impressions and things, I set down everything I knew, that everything I felt, mm-hmm. from paranormal sources, from the hypnotic mm-hmm. regressions, from the psychic readings, from my own emotions, everything, wrote everything down. Then I started poking into the history. And as I poked into the history, I might see a photograph, and I would record and date. I did it by email because I had somebody helping me. What was my feeling when I looked at that picture, that person, or that street name, you know? And I'll give a real simple example of that. The person that was researching with me sent me a bunch of street names from a city that I knew that I had lived in, Portland, Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to one, and I said, Danforth. There's a Danforth Street in Portland, Maine. I said, Danforth. We used to, you know, Abby and I used to joke about that. We used to say, let's go to Danforth. And then a little later, as I was typing, I said, wait a minute, that's not quite right. I used to say, let's go forth to Danforth. That was a joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I remembered that. So I wrote it down, and I sent it to the researcher, and I kept a copy. And a year later, I found in a book about, old book about Portland, Maine, it said that Danforth Street connected with something called the Western Promenade. And Matthew had mm-hmm. definitely been on the Western Promenade because he wrote about it. And that was why they like to go there, because they like to go out in nature, as one of the psychics told me. They like to go on picnics and go out in nature. So that's why they would go forth to Danforth, because it connected with the Western Promenade. But I didn't know that a year earlier, but it just came into my mind. You know, that's a very small example. I have much better ones, but just to give you an idea of how I did the research.
Right. It's really interesting.
It is. And I just want to say, while we're talking about proving and evidence and stuff, you know, some mediums like Bill Collard would buy into reincarnation, but just said that you can't really prove it, because when you're reading someone's past life, you don't know if it's someone else's past life, so because you can't validate it. So I think this goes back to the whole question, because we're getting a lot of comments on both sides of the table in the chat room that it's a really hot topic, and I wanted to ask you what you talk about cryptomnesia, is that it?
Yeah, cryptomnesia.
Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, that is one of the skeptical arguments against reincarnation, and it seems to be the case sometimes. And what it is, for example, they have cases where under hypnosis somebody has given all of these details and has told a story and given the names mm-hmm. of the characters and everything, and then come to find out it was verbatim taken out of a novel that he had read and forgotten about.
Oh, you know, I see.
Here's all the characters, the plot, everything, you know, was clearly lifted. He'd just forgotten about it. Well, but there's many, many cases that don't fit that scenario, you know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying, including
mm-hmm.
mine. There's nothing about, I had to write the book about Matthew Franklin Whittier. I had to, you know how they'll take a skull and they'll, like, put clay on it and they'll recreate what they think the person looked like with the
mm-hmm.
eyes and everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I had to do with Matthew Franklin Whittier's life. He was ignored. His stuff is gone. You have to find little clues here and there and there and put them all. It was really a detective, you know, story. There's one place where you can go and read a dissertation if you can get hold of it. I was lucky enough to get hold of it. But a lot of the information was wrong, and I knew it was wrong. I could feel it was wrong, you know, and I proved it was wrong
right.
in many cases, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I could not have possibly read about this person, and, you know, or known anything about him in the past. And many, many times that's the case. But one of the other objections you brought up was the ESP objection. How do I know that it's not just ESP picking up on somebody else's life? How do I know that it's my life?
Right.
And that's where the emotions come in, and it's also where all the parallels come in. I'm so much like that person. You know, it's just, I'm just an extension of him. You know what I'm saying? I'm a modern extension, but I'm so much like him. And it's my emotions. It's not somebody else's emotions. So
now,
if you really study the cases carefully, the ESP objection
right.
flies out the window, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I know Carrie Ann she wants to go back to a question that we didn't get to ask earlier, but I just want to comment on that, you know, in just taking reincarnation, putting it aside for a moment, even in just doing mental mediumship, one of the challenges I've had, I always try to go for at least 5 points of verification. And also, I, on my ghost investigations, which is a whole different thing, of course, from mediumship in a way, but I always look for things that are on cue. For example, if the pipes, the old heating pipes in a building suddenly make rattling noises at a certain time, it's just old heating pipes. But if you ask a question and a second later they bang two times, then you have to look at that as, gee, is there a parallel there? Is it not just a coincidental thing? Am I not just wishfully thinking that this might be the same person I am? You know, so that
yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is does it make sense then that you have to look for a lot of different matches and not just
absolutely.
Saying,
yeah.
well, you know, that guy's got brown hair and I have brown hair, or I lived in Oregon and he lived in Oregon. I mean, there's got to be more in depth than that, right?
Well, I got a lot of hits in all the different categories that I mentioned, and I could give examples for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But in
mm-hmm.
the second psychic reading I had, I don't know if I'm allowed to mention names or not, so I won't unless you guys want me to, but I had a reading by this fellow who was also a psychic artist, but he came up with four names in the course of a reading, and I didn't give him anything to go on, because when I have a reading like this for research purposes, I don't tell him anything. You know, I just listen. You know, so he gave four names. Out of the four names, the first one made sense. This was really about Abby Whittier, Matthew's first wife, and the first one made sense because it was probably her brother. She had a brother who was kind of possessive, I think. And then the second one made sense later, only when he did the research. One of them, he was trying to get her middle or last name, and he got the sound of it, but he couldn't get it quite right because it's an odd name. So he sort of half struck out on that one. And then he got Matthew's first name out of the blue, you know, out of four.
Oh, gosh.
Over an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. So either he's on his laptop on the internet cheating, or it was a blazing hit, one of the two, which I think it was the latter, because this person has very good feedback. He's well certified. I don't think there's any way that he's sitting there on his laptop, you know,
mm-hmm.
doing internet research during the course of the phone reading. So, you know, if
right.
you take that
right.
that possible, you know, you have to try to be scientific, as rigorous as I can. That's something I can't prove he didn't do. But I also got there's another medium who I wrote to who knows him personally and vouched for his integrity and his skills and everything. And, you know, all his feedback on the internet is good. Nobody suggests that this guy's a fraud anywhere. So He did. You know, he did it. He got Matthew's name at the end of the reading. So, you know, yeah, I definitely look for hits like that. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I just so you know, I don't want to put you on the spot. I mean, I know you know, the show is to bring this information, to dialogue, to talk about the pros and cons, and but sometimes I just want to say to everyone out there that whatever you feel, whatever you agree or disagree with, the fact is sometimes people just, you also just sometimes know, no matter, it's your personal experience. Spiritual, I think we can all agree that spiritual experiences are very personal and not necessarily duplicatable in a laboratory or under scrutiny by third persons, but sometimes we just know what it is. And when we go with that gut, it follows the right track, and we keep getting a validation for ourselves. So, I mean, ultimately, it's our lives, it's our souls, and whatever we get, we have to go with what our heart says. So, this is really great. So, Carrie, and you had a question now. I think there was one question.
Right,
you wanted
that
to go
I
back
forgot
to.
To ask before, and it sort of, you know, it has to do with this whole thing of what do you say to people that say that there's no such thing or it can't be proven? I mean, what is your answer to that?
Well, there's the people that say it can't be proven are kind of usually trying to be open-minded, and they're able to be open-minded if they state it that way, you know. Well, you know, I'm trying to be open-minded, but you can't ever prove it. So, you know, that's a comfortable place for them. Now, I tend to be responding to what Joe said just now. I tend to be pretty aggressive, you know, in my attempting to shove home the point that it has been proven. And the reason I'm doing that is, in my perception, society is in denial, and that's where the change needs to happen. You know, we all, basically, if you look into it, if you look into it objectively, it's been proven. And when I say that, I interviewed Dr. Jim Tucker, who was Dr. Ian Stevenson's successor at the University of Virginia, the foremost scientific researcher into this. I drove over there to University of Virginia and set up my camera and interviewed him, and that video has now gone somewhat viral. But one of the things he told me was that they had a case with a little girl who remembered 25 names correctly and their relationship. So not only did she remember 25 first names, but whether they were brother or father or friend or uncle or whatever the relationship was, she got them all right. So... And no misses, so far as I know, as I understand. So at that point, it's like, how many names did the little girl have to get before you say uncle and say, okay, it's proven? You know, and that's not
right,
the only case. There's a whole bunch of cases, and maybe not quite that strong, but I came up with quite a few proofs myself.
Right, exactly.
You know, so at what point, you know, do you, it's kind of an old saw that people use to feel comfortable when they say it can't be proven. And people repeat it. It's like something that they've taken to be true. They've heard it somewhere and some, you know, and then they say it and the people keep saying it and it's kind of a truism, you know, but it doesn't really hold up if you look at it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you have some really interesting, you know, sides to it, so I think this is great discussion. Now, tell us about the documentary you created, In Another Life, Reincarnation in America. I mean, this is based on your findings and theories and all of that, I'm assuming, correct?
Yeah. That leads, I'm glad you waited on that last question, because this leads perfectly into it. That's the whole basis of the documentary. You know, I sat down and I could have done a documentary about, you know, here's reincarnation and here's the evidence and this is, you know, that, like educating people on something that they don't know. But the more I got into it, the more I realized that if they don't know, it's because they don't want to know. You know, in other words, society's in denial. So you have to actually address the real problem. And this is something I learned in my counseling training. People come with what they call a presenting problem, but then there's a deeper problem that's really beneath the presenting problem. So the presenting problem, in this case for society, if society was a client in therapy, the presenting problem is, you know, is reincarnation real? But the underlying problem is we already know it's real. We just don't want it to be real. You know? So
right,
the documentary
right.
addresses the deeper problem, which is what's going on with the denial. And that's why I have Dr. Robert Almeter, who says, you know, not only is it rational to believe in reincarnation, he's basing this on Dr. Ian Stevenson's studies, says not only is it rational to believe in reincarnation based on this, you know, studies, but it's irrational to disbelieve it. So he was directly addressing that issue of irrationality. And that's so.
Right.
So what I decided to do with the documentary was to take the pulse of the country. You know, who is experiencing what, and how are people
mm-hmm.
running into this? But what I'm saying is this is real. Reincarnation is a phenomenon, and I'm going to explore how people are running into this real phenomenon, not belief, not like what do people believe and why do they believe it. I wasn't talking about belief in this show at all. I was talking about an actual phenomenon, and I'm saying, how did you run into it? How did you run into it? And how did you run into it?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I mean, it's really excellent. Joe, did you have the next question?
Yeah. Yes. Now, regarding the books, your books are e-books, correct? And then
That's right.
All right. Can you tell us where they can be purchased? Are they online or?
Yeah, they're all online. I have an online store, which, believe it or
mm-hmm.
not, you can get a free online store. I found one.
Cool.
I'm on a very low budget, so I had to, you know.
No,
I can't,
that's good. Listen,
and,
it works.
Yeah.
And what's the what's the address?
Well, to get to it from my website would be the easiest thing, so I can give my URL and everything's accessible from there. So that's www.ial, which stands for In Another Life, IAL.goldthread.com. Goldthread is my former video business. So it's www.ial.goldthread.com.
That's one word, Goldthread.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
All right, great. Now that you've mentioned all your books, this leads us into our next discussion on communicating with soulmates after their death. So first, can you explain why you think that's possible?
Well, what happened was that I was busy researching my past life as Matthew Franklin Whittier. And as I got into his history, I found that he was married three times. But his first wife was really the love of his life, or that's what I felt. We don't really have that in history, but I strongly felt that. She died, I found out later, she died of consumption, which the first psychic had told me, that she died of tuberculosis, and consumption was tuberculosis. So there's another hit, you know. But after 5 years, so they only had 5 years, they lost both their young children before a year old, and they had just an awful time. And there was no real closure there, you know. And mm-hmm. the more I studied it, the more I felt, you know, I felt like, you know, I was reaching out to her, you know, and I missed her. But at one point, the researcher that was working with me sent me a letter written by her in her hand. And that's kind of interesting because up to that point, nobody seemed to know how her name was spelled. They spelled it A-B-B-I-E, and some people spelled it A-B-B-Y. And I would look at that A-B-B-I-E, and I would feel very annoyed, you know, indignant. You know, that's not right. Mm. You know, I'd say it's B-Y, and indeed, that's how she spelled it when I got the letter. But when I looked at that letter, I felt like crying. You know, it was like trying to come up in me, you know. I really, you know, it was really triggering something when I read it. And then a few days later, I was working by myself and listening to some music, and it triggered it, and all that grief came out, and I started sobbing and sobbing, you know, for her. The grief all came up. So, I mean, that's not too unusual, because in past life therapy, you know, many people can encounter feelings of grief or all kinds of feelings from past lives, and they're just as strong as they were in that lifetime, you know. The strength hasn't changed at all. So that's not unusual. But then I felt like maybe she was trying to contact me. And even then, I didn't think it was possible to continue a relationship. I just thought maybe she's trying to contact me somehow, you know. So it's kind of a long story. I won't go into the whole thing. But ultimately, I had this psychic reading, the first psychic reading, with the intent of trying to contact her. And the psychic told me, you know, I almost called you an hour before the reading was scheduled because I've been bombarded with images for the last hour, you know, which meant that Abby was really eager to talk to me, you know. It was like after it's been 170 years, you know. The psychic made several very strong hits, as Joe was talking about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was real clear that this was really her, and that she really loved me, and that I, you know, really loved her. And then at that point, I felt like, you know, yeah, this is possible. You know, this is possible to continue this. And so basically we figured out how to do it. You know, I learned how to communicate with her. It was pretty awkward at first, but I developed a system of yes and no communication and prompting that took us for about a year or so, and then I figured out how to channel her. And and it's gone on, and we decided to write a book about it together, really. So that's the short version.
How long did you say that period was?
Well, it's been over 2.5 years. That was March 2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The first year, basically, we just had yes and no, and it was just mm-hmm. prompting. And you want me to tell how that happened? It's,
yeah, sure.
Quick rundown. Yeah, I would be walking on the beach at night. I live a couple blocks from the ocean. And I would feel that she was with me, and I would just talk to her out loud, you know, out on the beach at night, you know, nobody's out there. So I would feel my hand tingling, you know, different parts of my hand. And I would just start saying, now I feel it in my, you know, knuckle of my third finger, and now I feel it here, just on the off chance that it was real, you know, I didn't know. And then I began to think, you know, I wonder if this is real. I wonder if she could actually move my hand. So I went back and I held my hand out and I just waited and waited and waited, and gradually my thumb started to close into my palm. It took about 10 minutes, and I thought, you know, I think she's actually able to do this. So from that we developed this. She taught me basically a very simple kind of communication, and I realized recently that it feels like dowsing. You know, you see a guy with the forked stick and he's walking around and suddenly the stick points down, you know. That's what it feels
mm-hmm.
like. And, of course, the question is, am I doing this myself? You know, is it really happening? Is my subconscious mind? I'm there's a skeptic in me that's every bit as strong as any other skeptic, you know. So all the skeptical questions come up. But over time, she's proved it to me that we really were able to communicate this way. And once we had yes and no, we had it, because you can play 20 questions. And recently I read a reincarnation book of somebody else that has the same kind of thing, only he uses head nods, but he went through the same process, you know, of yes and no and 20 questions. So that's how we got
I just want to just make a note. At the time, this mark at this time, let me see, 14 minutes left to the show. There's a signal that I get from the spirits whenever I do EVP recording or some event or something. I can't really describe the time here, but it's a certain radio frequency sound that I get over the mic, and I'm getting it again. And I've never had it on the show. So
cool.
That's
what I was called prompting, except I don't get it verbal, you know, I don't get it auditorily, but Abby can prompt me. You know,
yeah, and
it's a
signal that we're getting that there's a connection going on. So,
yeah,
anyway, I just want to make a case. Stephen, we also often get EVPs on the show when we play back the recording. So, there might be a message there for you.
We'll get.
Now, let's see, Carrie, did you get your question? I want to go on to talk about soulmates.
I think we're ready for that one, Joe.
All right. So,
right on schedule.
Do you advocate, Stephen, continuing a relationship after death? This is a huge subject. You cannot believe. Do you advocate a relationship after death as an option primarily for soulmates? Maybe could you describe about what soulmates means? Because I just want to say, you know, people say, oh, I met this guy, he's my soulmate. But you're really saying that a soulmate could be someone here, and then the mate could be on the other side, or you both be on the other side. So how would you advocate that or not advocate it? What would you say?
Well, what's coming to my mind, I think Abby's helping me a little bit with this, but what comes to my mind is I read a newspaper story not too terribly long ago about this couple, and they're just about to get married, and right before they get married, she has I think it was the guy that maybe he dove off a pier or something. Anyway, he's paralyzed. You know, suddenly he's paralyzed. And so, you know, they go ahead and get married, and somebody asks the girl, she says, it didn't change anything. You know, I didn't even think about it. Of course we get married. You know, in other words, she didn't stop to think that now I'm going to be taking care of somebody for, you know, 80 years instead of whatever she thought she was going to be doing. Didn't even faze her.
Mm-hmm.
That's soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So this is what you need. That's what you need to carry on this kind of relationship, because what you're talking about is a permanent long-distance relationship. People say, well, it's not easy to have a long-distance relationship. There's temptations, there's frustrations, there's needs, and you know, there's whatever, you know, and people kind of advise against it. Well, soulmates can do it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, soulmates could say, well, we're not going to be able to see each other for 6 years, but okay, we'll get through it, you know. And they'll figure out creative ways, you know. In other words, love is creative. So you think, well, let's get on Skype and let's, you know, you know, in other words, they try all kinds of creative ways to make it work. And that's what I found with Abby, is that with a spirit of fun and creativity, that we can make a, you know, almost a lover's game out of this. And what struck me very forcefully once is I thought, you know, I'm in exactly the same situation as the guy that's crying his heart out, you know, who's, mm-hmm. who's dying of grief. I'm in exactly the same situation he is, but I'm having fun.
Right.
It's a real irony, you know. Yeah, but not everybody could do that. Yeah, not everybody could sustain it.
And that leads right into this next question that I wanted to ask you, that how do you know then? Like, people could say to you, well, how do you know that that relationship that you have with Abby is real, and it's, that it's not just wishful thinking, like bringing it on? Like, what do you say to people who have that, you know, question for you?
Well, in the book, there's a lot of examples of proof. She proved it to me a lot. And early in the relationship, I was in a 3D IMAX theater, ostensibly with her, as I understood, you know, the situation that we both, that she was there, you know. But I this was early, and all of a sudden, I had this, right before the film started, for some reason, I had this terrible thought. I said, you know, what if I'm imagining this? And I said, you know, I'm getting emotionally invested in this. And I had a real faith crisis. It was very scary, you know, because I said, there's a fork in the road here, and when I go too far down this fork, it's going to be real hard to get back, you know, after I go.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so she knew that I needed proof, and she proved it to me over and over and over, and I'll give one of the best examples, I think, because it has a little twist to it. I didn't know what her birthday was. Nowhere in the history was her birthday. Matter of fact, you couldn't even tell for sure what year she was born from the history.
Right.
And then my researcher found proof, which was a sampler, a genealogical sampler, a tapestry that was woven by the family that had everybody's birth date, you know, exact birth date. And her birth date was June 2nd, 1816. So, you know, I thought, gee, that's a Gemini. And I've never felt comfortable about, you know, dating Geminis. You know, I had this thing of reading their description. I'm a Capricorn, you know, and I'm like, so I was worried about that. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's things you get in your mind about different signs and
mm-hmm.
stuff. So,
right.
So I was kind of uncomfortable about her being a Gemini, and I thought, well, maybe that's a mistake. Maybe she was adopted and they really didn't know what her birthday was, and they just said, well, let's make a nice summer one so she can have a summer birthday, you know. So that's kind of what I was thinking in my mind, that this must be just a, you know, they didn't know what her birthday was because she was adopted. So
mm-hmm.
we had this ability to, or this game that we played of picking CDs in the car. I've got a little CD book. It's got 24 CDs in it. You flip through it like a book and pick one, right? So, and, you know, play it. So what we do is I will not look. Sometimes I even close my eyes. There's no way I'm seeing it through my peripheral vision. I flip through them, and I'm waiting for her prompt, right? So when I get mm-hmm. to the one she wants, I'll get a prompt. And then I'll say, do you want the left side or the right side? It's, you know, I'll say left, and I'll say right, and then I'll get a prompt. So like say it's the right, you know. And then I'll say, now tracks, 1, 2, 3, I'll count down the tracks and I'll get a prompt.
Okay.
So I've done this a bunch of times, and it's, you know, very strong evidential results from this. But in this case, this was a CD that she never picked, that I didn't usually play. It was called, I think it's Night Sky Essays, if I remember correctly. It's by Liz Story. And
mm-hmm.
there's a song for each sign in the zodiac in order, right? So she picks track 3. And by this time, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm thinking I know where she's going with this, but I think Gemini is 5. You know, I don't know my astrology at all, right? So I get back
mm-hmm.
home and I look, and no, Gemini is number 3. So she, but the clincher to this whole thing was, I'm not even looking at the CD. She's picked it, okay? I know which one she wants, but I haven't looked at it. I don't know what it is. And when she gets track 3, I get the real strong feeling from her, you might not like this. And I thought she meant mm-hmm. I might not like the song, because I don't know what CD I picked. See?
Right.
But what she said was, you might not like the fact that I am, in fact, a Gemini. See? So,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So, but she's done this a bunch of times. But that one was interesting because it shows it wasn't my mind. See, it was somebody else's mind, because my mind was going to, I might not like the song. I had no idea
what she picked.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's just one. She's done that
amazing.
a bunch of times. Yeah. And then other, you know, groups, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, there's so many other things at the Country House restaurant, which is, I think, Carrie Ann, the first place we ever investigated for your
right.
book, the Ghost Book. The owner there, his name is Bob Williamston, And Annette, who is the resident spirit that's been there for, 300 years, Carrie-Anne? Is that right? About 300 years?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Her name is Williamson, or if I have it backwards, I apologize. But
names
are almost
they're
almost identical. And the thing is that he's had, from the time he was a waiter at this place, he's had this love of this place as if he lived there before. And it's just the coincidence of the names being the same except for one letter. It's it's something to be interested in, you know, just out of anything, coincidentally. But I think he's probably, that Annette might have been his sister or wife, or they might have had a relationship, you know, back then, because it seems like he's been drawn back. He took the place over now, and it's a very successful restaurant.
Exactly. But, so who knows who we call that our somewhere in time, right, Joe? That it's a somewhere in time from the movie.
Oh, that's right.
Exactly.
So what were you saying, Stephen?
Oh, I don't know. Go ahead. I don't remember.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I don't want to ask.
Tangents here.
Well, I know.
Yeah,
you know, it's such a huge subject, and you know, everyone has a strong opinion on it. I want to ask you now. This Carrie-Anne wrote this question down for me to ask, actually, but maybe you did. But I do you think this kind of relationship, attempting this relationship, could be dangerous? I just want to let you know that I don't think it is, but I want to see what you think.
Well, you know, I did mention that experience I had in the movie theater, and
right.
if you ride the fence, if you can't come down on it one way or the other, I think it could tear you apart. And, you know, somebody that wasn't real stable, you know, would, you know, they get emotionally invested and then they start doubting. Abby told me something early on that was very interesting. She said that there are many people on the other side who would very much like to do this. But the rep that Earth people have over there is that they're fickle. They can't sustain it. You know, so the spirits are very reluctant to get into something knowing that the physical person is going to say, well, I talked to somebody who talked me out of it, you know, or I don't believe anymore, or I need somebody physical, or there's actually another option, and that is, and there's two people that have written books about this that I found two books about this so far by other people, and what they've done is they, after the person died, they kept in touch for about a year through the grieving process. And it got them through the grieving process. In other words, they continued the relationship for about a year until they were ready to let go. That's something that people who aren't soulmates, you know, and there's no shame in not in your partner not being a soulmate necessarily. It's a specific type of relationship. They can do that. There's nothing wrong with that. Keep it going for a year until you're really ready to let go and you feel comfortable with it. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But this,
yeah.
But what I'm
yeah.
doing, this, well, you know, I'm making a commitment. I consider myself married. I'm not open to any other relationships. So I made a commitment that I am not going to have a physical relationship with anybody for the rest of my natural life.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big commitment.
That was one of the questions. Yeah, that's a big commitment.
So who's ready to do that? You know, only the soulmates really are ready to do that. Like the girl that said, well, he's paralyzed. Okay, we're just going to get married anyway. You know?
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that's a beautiful story. It really is. And for those who are interested in it, could you tell us your website again if they want to check out these e-books?
Yeah, it's www.ial.goldthread.com.
Okay, great. I can't believe we're just about out of time here. And we still had so many things we wanted to ask you, Stephen. You're very interesting. But if you had to say, because we only have a couple of minutes, what would be the one thing you'd want people to take away with them tonight?
Well, I do want people to start thinking of reincarnation as a phenomenon and not just a belief. So that's...
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the very first thing. And I think that wraps it up
right there, actually.
That's really,
And
I want us to think that there is the option of continuing a relationship for someone.
Right.
I want them to think
okay. I appreciate that, Stephen. We are out of time. You're a wonderful guest. Thank you for sharing with us tonight.
Thank you, Stephen.
Definitely
have to continue this.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for joining us tonight. You've been listening to the Carrie-Anne and Joe Show. The views and beliefs expressed by the hosts and their guests during the show are solely their own opinions. We'd like to thank our special guest, Stephen Sakellarios. for joining us on the show tonight. The show is hosted by Carrie Ann Flanagan-Broski and co-hosted by Joe Giaquinto. The show's producer is Joe Giaquinto. Opening and closing theme music is provided by Corey Polizzi. Additional music provided by Geoff Harvey and Chris Martin, Simon Stockhouse and Butterfly T and Hollywood Edge. Music distributed by Audio Micro. Thank you for listening and have a wonderful holiday. Merry Christmas.